Shall we have a moment of silence followed by the Serenity Prayer, please? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Right now, if you haven't, please turn your cell phones off. And let's see. Suggested Al-Anon preamble to the 12 steps. The Al-Anon family groups are a fellowship of relatives and friends of alcoholics who share their experience, strength, and hope in order to solve our common problems. We believe alcoholism is a family illness and that changed attitudes can aid recovery. Al-Anon is not allied with any sect, denomination, political entity, organization, or institution. Does not endorse any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. There are no dues for membership. Al-Anon is self-supporting through our voluntary contributions. Al-Anon has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps, by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics, and by giving understanding and encouragement to the alcoholic. Anonymity statement. There may be some who are not familiar with our tradition of personal anonymity at the public level. If so, we respectfully ask that no Al-Anon, Alateen, or AA speaker or member be identified by full name or picture in published or broadcast reports of our meeting. The assurance of anonymity is essential to our efforts to help others, other families of alcoholics, and our tradition of anonymity reminds us to place principles above personalities. And this meeting is being recorded. And I'm Mark, and I'm very happy to be here. Let's see. Any announcements? Okay, that takes care of that. The topic, Al-Anon for men, I have a lot of experience of that. And when I came in for my first meeting 30 years ago, I didn't know that Al-Anon wasn't for men. So when I saw this topic, I says, well, you know, what the heck? It always was for me. And so, you know, when the chance came to work to chair a workshop, I jumped at it. And at this time, I'd like to introduce our speaker, Mike.
Hi, I'm Mike. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. Where do I begin? I've asked to speak for about 10 minutes, so I'm not going to go into details about my total details about my life. But what qualifies me simply is I have two alcoholic parents. I have numerous alcoholic friends, many in recovery, some are not. I belong. I find the topic interesting of Al-Anon welcoming men because I didn't question it either. As far as belonging, simply because the traditions tell me I belong. It doesn't say women only. It says that my life's been affected by somebody else's drinking. And I have qualified many times over. I think the part for me when I think about, well, does Al-Anon welcome me, it's more of a question for me of whether I truly welcome Al-Anon. I can think of a million things, a million excuses as to why I don't need to be a part of this, or I don't want to be a part of this. But it's never been that Al-Anon hasn't been welcoming me. Little background, I guess I should say a few things. Background, I'm from Lansing, Michigan. And those that are from the States that know, we use the hand to reference where I'm from. I'm from about right here. I'm 37. I'm single. I'm gay. I'm grateful for the opportunity to have had Al-Anon for many, many years. I was introduced to Al-Anon as a kid. I was about 5 when I first got introduced, when my dad in particular, got sober. It has not been all happy, joyous, and free by any means, but it has been a very interesting journey for me in that I've had to overcome a lot of my own personal feelings of not belonging. And I still have those challenges today. You know, do I belong in this meeting? Do I belong in this program? Do I fit in anywhere? Because I simply didn't feel, growing up, that I fit in anywhere. And Al-Anon and Alateen as well gave me an opportunity to fit in somewhere. I didn't fit in at school. I was the kid that got along with the teachers, but didn't get along with the peers. I was the guy that just didn't feel good enough, no matter what I did. So the program gave me a place to belong. And yes, you know, 25, 30 years ago, sure, it was women. So my experience is I get along real well with women. I'm actually really challenged, and I think it's rather funny that I was asked to speak at this particular workshop, because this is scary as hell. I don't do well interacting with men. And for a guy that happens to be gay, that's also a challenge in my life. So, work in progress. I thought it important really to truly emphasize that I do belong. And anyone sitting here that has been affected by somebody else's drinking, whether it's a partner, whether it's a parent, whether it's a friend, you belong. I do belong. And I have to tell myself that on a daily basis. Because it's easy, it's really easy to grab onto all the excuses that I can grab onto that says I should be somewhere else. I shouldn't be here. But when people share, and it doesn't matter if you're to me, it doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman. If you say something and I can take it and run with it, I'm going to run with it. You know, the program's taught me that many times it's the message that's being carried and not the messenger. I do appreciate that Al-Anon has taught me that, in the closings and the meetings that I go to in my area, it talks about that you may not like all of us, but you'll love us in a very special way. Thank God I don't have to like everybody, because there are people in meetings that I am just not going to get along with. And it doesn't, you know, I appreciate knowing that I don't have to. You know, I've spent too much of my life trying to please other people. I'm trying to have, I wish everybody would like me. And if not everybody likes me, then what the hell is wrong with me? And I don't have to do that in an Al-Anon meeting. I can say something, and you may not like it. Well, that's suddenly is not, you know, that's just not my problem anymore. You know, if you don't like it, you take it, or you take it and carry your resentment, or you leave it in the meeting and you take whatever else you like. And I appreciate that, because I need to be reminded that when I sit in a meeting, it's not always what that everybody says something that I need. It's just that something was said that I can take and apply it to my life. I'll be honest. I have a lot of work to do. I have a long ways to go in terms of learning how to interact with men in particular. My lacking is, I don't know that I do a great job today in welcoming men to meetings, or anybody for that matter. I get caught up in my little world, and my little world has a lot of fear still attached to it that says that you all bite, and that if I try to approach you and you say, you blow me off, or you have whatever else is going on in your world, it might not have anything to do with me. I still take it internally as if, well, you are rejecting me, and you don't want me here, and I don't want to, you name the excuse, I've thought of it, I'm sure, I felt it. So part of my higher power's work today, at least as I see it, is finding a way to carry message to men when I have a hard time in an intimate one-on-one or even in a meeting session doing that. And that's my thing. That's my fear. I have a background as such of sexual abuse as well that really, it is what it is. I'm 37. At some point I know in my own recovery I have to get beyond that. I have to be willing to say, hey, carry the message. It doesn't say carry it to this person and that person I like or that, It says carry the message. I spent a lot of years in recovery questioning whether I really had a message to carry. When I got this invitation, I initially had that thought too. What do I have to share? I'm a 30-something guy that, is not married, that hasn't really been in a serious relationship, doesn't have that perspective. But I don't know. I seem to have all the isms of many other Al-Anon members. I still want to fix. I still want to control. I still want to. I want to tell whoever it is in my life what they should do. I just know that I can't do it. Doesn't mean I don't think it, but I can't. I can't do that today. I don't know. I really don't. I don't have anything really, any earth-shattering messages other than I think the most important thing for me is to welcome everybody. And that's something I need to do more of. I don't stand here. I just don't see myself as carrying the ultimate message. I'm just telling you, like anybody else in this room, I have a long ways to go. So I think I've said enough. I really don't have anything else to add. So thank you all for being here. I appreciate the privilege. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. Well, this is my second international convention. In 1985, my wife and I took 44 other people from Chicago to Montreal and had a ball. And this convention is just, I know she's here with me in spirit, and, it's an honor to be up here. At this time, I'll throw the floor open to anybody that wants to speak. To comment, to share their experience, strength, or hope. And I hope there's a lot of takers. We need someone to keep track of the time. And so, you know, I'm throwing the mic open to, this is your big chance to speak at an international. Yes.
Good day, everyone. I'm Terry, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. I really hope you can understand me, because I certainly can't understand you guys. That's what I mean. When I talk to you, I hope I don't offend you by saying things. I pick up things that you're saying, and I think, gee, I couldn't say that in Australia, so... You guys say it's an honest program. We say it's a Fair Dinkum program. So, look, I'll just talk on my experiences. In Australia, I go to Al-Anon meetings. I went to one the other week, and there were 17 women and myself. A lot of those ladies are controlling women, so you can imagine what the meeting was like. But my experiences with alcoholism, my family weren't alcoholics. I didn't come from an alcoholic background. My first wife died an alcoholic at the age of 32. Painful thing to watch, but in those days alcoholism, AA, was not like it is today. I married my second wife, and it wasn't until 2 years ago that we found out that she was an alcoholic. So I thought, I must attract these people. How am I going to handle it? With my first wife, I just turned my back and thought, this is too hard. I don't know how to work on this. But with my second wife, I've been able to work with her, and she's been sober now for 2.5 years, and I gave up the booze 2 years ago, mainly to help her through the program. But I found along the way that I'm a big part of it, because when we go out somewhere, we always have a drink. My wife, every time my wife's glass was empty, I'd fill it up for her, because that's what she wanted. So I found that I'm a big part of the problems of an alcoholic, and I'm grateful for my group in Australia to help me work through those problems and support my wife all through it. And I own a funeral company in Australia, and man, do I see so many problems of people after the fact of what they've died from. And in most cases, it's an addiction, especially alcohol. So it's a sad situation. So any help that I can give myself or anyone that's an alcoholic or an addict, I certainly do that. So thank you for listening to me. And if you didn't understand anything, come and see me afterwards and I'll explain.
To go from one accent to another. My name is John, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. I carry a blue badge, which means that I'm a double winner. Actually, for years I've been a triple winner. I was an Al-Latin sponsor for several years back in Arizona and also over in Brussels in Belgium. I have the opinion that that Al-Anon is for men and men are welcome. I came in here in Al-Anon, I came into AA because I was going to help my wife. and she ended up having a serious depression, and she blamed it all on my drinking. And I didn't think I had a drinking problem, but I was going to help her, so I gave up drinking, and I went to AA, and I was sitting there pretending because I didn't think I belonged there at all. And I got myself a sponsor in AA whose wife told me, "Johnny, you need Al-Anon more than I do. Why don't you go over?" And this is about 17 years ago now. I grew up in Sweden in an alcoholic home. My dad was an alcoholic. He never found sobriety before he died. And my wife, I swore as a kid that I was never going to be like either by my dad or my mother. And I turned out to be a happy medium of both of them. So, there was no doubt in my mind that Al-Anon is what, the Al-Anon in me is what brought me into sobriety. I have, as I said, I've been in the program for about 17 years, and the thing about it is being a double winner is that you are, you're excluded from some of the service work, but that doesn't mean that you can't do service work in Al-Anon as well. And as I said, as an Al-Latin sponsor over the years, that was my part of doing it. I can also be a literature person in the Al-Anon groups and do a lot of other things. So it doesn't exclude us at all if we're double winners. And another thing I also find very important, and Al-Anon has been a great help for me, is the fact that the only requirement for being a member is that we have friends or family members that have problems with alcohol. And if you are a sponsor in AA, who are your friends? And so I wouldn't be able to do my sponsorship in AA. Would drive me nuts if I didn't have Al-Anon. So I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad you are all here, and I wish you a very, very enjoyable convention. Thank you.
We need a volunteer to keep track of the time, please. Okay.
Hi, I'm also John, and I'm a very grateful member of Al-Anon. Mike, I really want to thank you for sharing here with us about your fears related to Al-Anon and life in general. And I can honestly tell you that coming into Al-Anon, Al-Anon was my biggest fear. In fact, the home group that I go to is called the Rainbow Al-Anon Group, and for whatever reason, the name of the group, Rainbow Al-Anon, just scared me to death. And I don't know why. People say, well, it probably has gay connotations, and I'm like, no, that wasn't the reason. It just bothered me. But when it comes down to it, one of the things that I've discovered as I've worked through my steps and continue to work on step 10 and those kinds of things, the thing I've discovered is that all of my issues are related to my fear that I'm not good enough, that I don't fit in. And so, Mike, I really identify with what you had to say there, and I appreciate everybody coming here and sharing that with us. Thanks.
My name is Richard, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. Wonderful time, isn't it? All these people wearing these green badges. Fills your heart with joy. One day, I can remember I came home from work, and it was not a good day at work. And I knew that my son was home, but he didn't answer. So I found him downstairs in a coma, frothing at the mouth, and I quickly had to drag his ass into the car and take him to the hospital and be told by the doctor it was a nip and tuck. And once again, I found myself in the hospital with my son once again on death's door. and I felt hopeless and helpless. What hadn't I done? What should I do? And you know what? I looked at the doctor and I thought, he's clueless as far as my situation. And then I found my way to Al-Anon. And I found my way to some kind of sanity. I would like to say that my son is recovered. He is not. When my phone rings and it's him, I think he's in jail. He's in the hospital. If it's one of his friends, my son's dead. Because I have come to accept the fact that my son's path with his higher power, that he might get it on the other side. And does it break my heart? It does. Does it stop me from fighting for some enjoyment in my day? It does not. It does not. I'd like to say that. It is less of a struggle today for me to try to carve out some happiness because I have the tools of Al-Anon. I was blessed when I came to Al-Anon. I have not caused it, I cannot control it, and I cannot cure it. You know, if my wife, whom I love, was an addict or was the alcoholic, it would be different. When it is your child, it is so hard. I shouldn't say that because what if my wife was alcoholic? But I am a firm believer that even when the alcoholic is active and has no intent of ever finding his way into the rooms, I can still have a life and see that my higher power is working with him too. And you know, let go, let God. It's hard, but with you people and with the literature, I have a fighting chance. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Ken P., a very grateful Al-Anon. By the grace of God in this program, I have remained relatively sane for the last 34 years. And that in the face of an insane illness, as every guy in this room knows. Mike, I really relate to you. When I came into Al-Anon in 1976, I was one of four men in Houston. We could have met in a telephone booth. As God would have it, one of those four became Scotty L., my sponsor. And bless his heart, he just stayed on my tail. I told him every reason why I had no purpose being in Al-Anon whatsoever. He kept saying, you have to go to a meeting. We can't just keep meeting at Denny's while you sit and cry every night. So I did. I went to a meeting 300 miles away in Dallas. And I sneaked into the room. And all the real men were across the hall laughing boisterously in AA. And they were all old women. It was dark. It was sad. And I ran out the back door immediately afterwards, called Scotty and said, I went to a meeting that took care of that. A lot has happened in 34 years. Now I go every Monday night to a meeting in the Woodlands, Texas, which only has 80,000 people in it. And there are about 20 men in there who are all Al-Anons laughing boisterously. And there are 60 men on the roster. And the Al-Anon World Service Office tells me in their data that they just got back in 09 that 16% of the U.S. right now are Al-Anon men. They also tell me a striking thing, and that is that 30% of all the Al-Anons right now who walk into a meeting in the United States have an adult son who is an alcoholic. 30%. Now, I've dedicated my life to being part of the solution to this problem and not part of the problem. About 10 weeks ago, I buried the lady who brought me into the program, with each one of her hands being held by one of her sons. And if this is a life and death disease, it was for her and it is for me. One of the things that's become my cause celebre is that Working with two other men, we've realized in the last 4 years that there is absolutely no literature written for codependent men by codependent men. None. And Melanie Beatty has written 14 books on it. 20 million of them sold just for Codependent No More. So we've written one. Anyone who wants to talk to me after this meeting, please do. We have a blog site with 120,000 readers, believe it or not. And we are working to develop literature for men who have this disease of codependency in their house, be it wife, mother, or a daughter. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jeff, and I'm a very grateful member of Al-Anon from Wichita, Kansas, and I'm very fortunate that I have a men's group in my town. When I first came into Al-Anon, I tried several meetings out, and I know there's some women here. There's a bunch of old biddies in Al-Anon, and, you know, I just could not connect with them discussing their problems and what I was going through. You know, us men can come into a men's meeting, talk about sex, money, whatever, and it's all right. You know, I can't go do that in any other meetings. And I think I'm very fortunate that I have a men's meeting in my town. But there's some questions that I have about men in meetings. It's kind of like, you know, Mike, how do I deal with a gay person comes up to me and wants me to be their sponsor? I'm not comfortable with that today. I have nothing against gay people. I like gay people. But, you know, again, it's like a man and a woman for me in the fellowship. Another thing that really is troubling me, and maybe you guys can share your experience on this, is us men have a hard time accepting we're powerless over you name it. How do you know, and I see men all around me that need this program so bad, and are they going to admit that they're powerless over anything? Hell no, is what I experience. And I need to hear your experience about how to get those people into our meetings. Several guys ask me, what meetings you go to? And I tell them when it is, blah, blah, blah. And I cannot get them to come, even though I can sense that they want to. But, you know, I am not going to hold their hand, drag them in there, and do that. And in the same token, you know, I see so many young kids. You know, I'm almost 50, and when I see young kids, they're in their 20s and 30s, come in, and again, it's a bunch of old guys or a bunch of old women. And how do they connect with a group? You know, because there aren't any really young men's groups either. And, you know, our group just struggles with that, how to keep those guys coming back. Because for me, I've learned that it's a life program. You know, I'm not ever going to quit. It's not I have to go to a meeting. It's like that's my calendar, and I go to meetings. And a lot of them include women. But another thing I want to say to you guys, get involved in service. That has helped me so much become a part of this fellowship, whether it's at your district, area level, or even higher than that. And I'm very grateful. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Kevin. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon from Milwaukee, Oregon. And my home group is Men's Growing Towards Wisdom, 6 o'clock at the Northwest Al-Ano Club in Portland, Oregon. And it is the best men's Al-Anon meeting in town. It's also the only men's Al-Anon meeting in town, although there is one in Vancouver if you want to hit Monday night. So anyways, the thing for me for Al-Anon is Al-Anon was not my first program. I came through the ACOA groups, and I spent a lot of time talking about how it was growing up in a lot of time in the problem talking about how it was growing up in my Al-Anon family. There was no active alcoholism in my family, but I grew up in a family that was profoundly affected by the disease of alcoholism. And I spent a lot of time in the program, talking about what it was like growing up in that, and then I had to grow up. And so eventually I came to Al-Anon. The only problem with that was the only Al-Anon meetings that I was running into, went to about three Al-Anon meetings, and I'm sorry, ladies, they're just these crazy gals that were just out of their minds, and I just could not stand sitting in the meeting. I had just had to leave. And my saving grace was being able to go to that men's meeting and listen to men with the same experience that I had talk about it. And, you know, Michael, when you talked about dealing with men, I had a very angry father growing up, and so it was tough for me to be able to sit in a room full of men. But it was really good for me to sit there and listen to men talk about being loving to each other treating each other with love and treating their family members with love and living in a program of love and being able to relate to that and understand that and actually see what it's like to have mature men act like mature men. You know, not angry, not destructive, not cruel, but mature, loving men. And that's the real, you know, the real beauty of this program for me and the men's meeting for me. I do have a sponsor that I found in that meeting, and I desperately needed a sponsor. I recommend for anybody that can find a men's meeting that they try to find it in a men's, you know, in that men's, try to sponsor and find a sponsor in that men's meeting. Let's see. My sponsor did tell me after I spent a lot of time in that meeting, that was my main meeting, that I needed to go out to a mixed meeting so that I could hear what women had to say in this program. And I said, really? And he said, yes, because they talk about feelings. And so I've recently started going to a mixed meeting also. So anyways, that's all I have to say. Thank you for being here.
Hi, I'm Craig, a grateful member of Al-Anon, also a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I first went to Al-Anon about 23 years ago, about 6 months after I got sober, and my reason for going to Al-Anon the first time was that I was trying to figure out how to get my wife to go to Al-Anon, and it didn't work. And, you know, that marriage didn't survive my sobriety, I went for a while, and it didn't get her in there, so I stopped going, and then I went back again a few years later. Ultimately, in about 2000, my second wife ended up being an alcoholic, and I went to actually a men's meeting in Laguna Beach, California, that was typically close to half the size of this meeting every week. And I did that for about 5 years, and then I moved. And where I moved, there aren't any men's meetings. I quit going again for a while, and a few years ago, I went back to Al-Anon. I came back and after about five meetings, you know, I had a little bit of recovery under my belt from, you know, certainly the other program as well as the time I had spent in Al-Anon, and I can talk the talk and that kind of stuff. And I was sitting in a meeting, and I don't even remember the topic or anything, but I spoke at the meeting, and after the meeting, this young man came up and asked me to sponsor him. And I had to tell him I couldn't sponsor him. And I couldn't sponsor him because I had never worked the steps in Al-Anon, and I believe that you can't lead somebody where you haven't been. And I went home, and I felt so bad about that I went and got a sponsor for the first time in Al-Anon, and I've worked the steps, and for the last 3-4 years, I actually spent more time in Al-Anon than I have in AA. And I've learned a lot of things. I learned a lot of things working the steps using the blueprint for progress that I never learned. And I can't tell you how many times I've done the steps in AA, and I learned a lot of things. Some of the simpler ones are I've learned to detach with love. I didn't learn that in other programs. I've learned that no is a complete sentence. You know, the lessons today I believe that I stayed sober long enough that I got to come to Al-Anon. I believe it's a privilege and an honor, and I need to be here. Thank you.
Hi, my name's John. I'm a grateful Al-Anon. I just wanted to tell you, I heard service work mentioned, and I want to tell you about the worst service work you can think of if you're in Texas. This is the heart of Texas, and we are full of cowboys. And cowboys don't want to sit around a table and tell you what's on their mind. They're real uncomfortable. They'd rather be back on the ranch, even if they don't have one, and that's where they want to be. So I got involved in service work for one reason or another. My daughter is a meth addict, and she's not in recovery. So I co-chair a weekly newcomers group where family members are encouraged, if their family member is in a rehab center, to come. And they're encouraged by getting extra visiting time. I know that's not really cricket. They're not coming on their own. But my attitude is they showed up, and maybe if I say something or they'll hear something for somebody else, it'll work out. That's the easy one. The hard one is in drug court, and it's challenging for a couple of reasons. These people are in recovery, and they haven't done anything violent enough to get them thrown in jail. And if they keep their act clean, their record gets erased. So there's a judge up there. He knows there's an Al-Anon volunteer. And he points at me and asks if there's any family members who want to go talk to Al-Anon. And nobody raises their hand. Because either they're about to go before the judge, or their family members want to hang out while their loved one goes before the judge to show their support. So the judge will just go, no volunteers? Okay, you five go. And so I'm sitting back there a lot of times with five people who aren't really qualified for Al-Anon. They're in AA, you know, AA or some other program. And I couldn't figure what to say to these people. So what I ended up saying to them is I tried to understand where they're coming from and start there. And I tell them, if you got anybody who's giving you a hard time about your addiction, Al-Anon's going to make your life better. That's it. They don't have to say anything. If they hear that, a lot of times they'll look up and they'll be really surprised. And the other trick, and I can't really recommend this maybe for a lot of you, and if you don't like harsh language, I'll clear this up. But you know, I learned it by watching a female war correspondent have to jump on trucks with all these soldiers, and they just sit there and say, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. And that's how they answered the questions. And so she got used to jumping on a truck and going, what's up, MFers? And all of a sudden, all the men opened up, said nothing. You know, they had all sorts of things to say, because she just said what they usually say to each other. So when I'm in drug court, and I got about four or five addicts, some are on the border of jail or coming out or whatever, I just throw my book down and go, what's up, mother? Oh, sorry. I almost said it again. But and that gets their attention. They quit looking at the table like they're already in jail, and they look up. And the moral of that story is, I believe, this is my personal opinion, there's no guy who's too tough to be reached eventually if you start where they are. And you got to be creative and come up with some unorthodox stuff. But if you can, what I found is if you can get a guy to understand that they're going to need to be tough, you are going to have to be tough. If you're a cowboy, you're going to have to be tougher because you're in Texas. And if I can start from that perspective and tell them what being tough really means in the situation they're in, some of them listen to me. That's all I got. Thanks.
My name is Diego. I'm a grateful Al-Anon. Whoa, my goodness. I'm a little nervous. But that means that this is something that I need to do. My home group is Men's Stag, 7 o'clock, Let's Rock La Quiñera in California. And when I walked into that room, there was around 100 men. And I was pretty much one of the youngest. I think I was, if not the youngest, I was the second or the third youngest there. And I immediately got kind of catapulted back to my childhood, and I was just like very hypervigilant. The funny thing is I didn't know what was happening to me. I learned that word in recovery, hypervigilance. You know, I there was something that was happening in that room that I couldn't describe, and so I came back the following week, and by the third week, I learned what was going on in that room, and it's for the first time I saw men that were sharing from a place that I would never allow anybody to get to. They were sharing vulnerable, they're sharing from the heart, and they can just stand up and speak and share that way and not have to feel ashamed, not have to feel like they were going to get attacked or dissected. And there's a lot of love in that room. You gotta understand, these things that I'm speaking about now, I didn't understand back then. When you asked me how I felt, I couldn't tell you how I felt. I had been shut off from feelings and emotions. And I literally they gave me a little piece of paper with little faces and what those faces represented underneath them, just for me to start identifying what was I feeling. I would not allow myself to feel anger because I was ashamed to have anger. Because bad people are angry, you know? Because I saw my mom and her explosion. And I said to myself very early on as a child that I wasn't going to be like these people, you know? So I started really, at a very young age, I started amputating my emotions and my feelings because my perception was that if I show these feelings and these emotions that I was a bad person. And I was internally angry. And I learned that internally angry people usually end up on top of roofs and buildings like I do. And they're cutting themselves like I do. And I learned a lot. You know, everything I did was conditional. Because I wanted your approval. And because I wanted to be loved. And I didn't know that and I couldn't say that. You know, but yet I expected you to know. And when you didn't know that, I felt resentful. I come from an alcoholic family. I watched my uncles. By the time I was 11 years old, I've seen both of my uncles die of this disease. And I got front row seats for that. You know, prior to that, I was just a shock absorber for my family and the family issues. I was that adult child who was coming up with, you know, I was that child coming up with adult solutions for the adults in my family. And at a very young age, I learned how to put myself and my needs on the shelf. So when I walked through the doors, I was coming apart at the seams. And I was desperate enough to sit down and stay there in that seat. You know, I was born and raised in Puerto Rico. I felt like I was yanked out of that little piece of island at the age of 7. I came to New York City in the middle of the 80s, which is a very rough place. And I didn't know the language. I didn't know the culture. And I had to just constantly cut a lot of pieces and parts of me in order to survive. You know? Al-Anon saved my life. My family's in Puerto Rico. My family's in New York. And I stay in California for my recovery, for my life. I learned how to protect my life for the first time in my life. And I finally got to understand what love and love with respect from the men in that room. And slowly but surely, I felt safe enough to be a kid again. You know, and these men, we go on two off-site retreats a year. And up there, I got to do a bike ride with them, and it's the first time that I've actually felt free. Just safe enough to just be me. And I'm still learning what that is and what that means. They started me up real simple. When you get up in the morning, have something to eat. In the afternoon, have something to eat. Because I wasn't eating. My first meal of the day would come at night. I spent 12 hours of the day without eating, drinking water. My mental health was deteriorating. All these things were happening. But I was so I was so blocked off from me that I couldn't see what was happening to me. And I'm grateful that I was desperate enough to let these men into my life. They shared from a place that it helped to bring down the barriers just enough for me, you know, to kind of let you in. I was very angry, and I didn't trust a single person. By the time I was 11 years old, I pretty much said I wasn't going to trust any of the adults, anybody that was supposedly taking care of me. So, it's been a long road, but it's the best part of my life. And today, it's the thing that I value most, is my recovery and the men, my family, my recovery family. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a sponsor. I sponsor men. I sponsor a gay man. He's like almost 50 years old, and we have so much in common. You know, I'm learning how to do relationships. I stayed out of a relationship for 2.5 years just to work on me. You know, I really didn't know how to live. You know, I've been homeless. You know, today I get to wake up in a bed. You know, I have a lot to be grateful for. You know, my mom flew in from New York, and I flew in from California, and we meet here. And we're the first members in our family to have recovery, a chance at recovery. All the men in my family have died of this disease. And I'm very blessed to have recovery, the gift of recovery in my life today. Thank you.
Hi there, my name is Larry. I am from Glendale, Arizona, and you know, I think one of the biggest things for me is willingness. You know, my first exposure to program was through AA, not being in AA, but my wife being in AA. So I was very willing to go to the AA meeting to make sure that none of those AA guys took her. Why? Because I had fear. That's a straight up reality. But you know what? My foundation was fear. You know, and that is through a whole childhood and growing up and just knowing what I know and the abnormal being normal. How was I going to know any different from the environment that I was in? So I'm sitting here at this open AA meeting, smokers meeting in Phoenix, fellowship hall. There's like 100 people in there and they're chain smoking. I mean, you can't see through there. All these biker dudes, you know, and I'm looking, I'm going, oh, God, here we go. And you know, this little guy comes up, his name is Shorty, and he's in leather riding pants, and he's got no shirt on. And he should have a shirt on, okay? And he gets up there, and you know what? He speaks from God. He speaks from the heart. He speaks about emotions. He speaks about feelings and all that stuff. And he walks out, and I'm like, whoa, what was that? Put a shirt on, but what was that? You know, I mean, it was good stuff. You know, and I sat there, and I'd still go to the meetings with my wife because I didn't want nobody to take her because I'm scared. Just the way it is. So I'm going. It's just like the Al-Anon meetings. You sit in that chair and pretty soon that stuff starts soaking up through your butt. It really does. I just started kind of listening and feeling and hearing, and we'd have people over at the house and, you know, all these guys would sit on the back porch and talk about feelings and emotions and all this stuff. And I'm used to talking about baseball and drinking and sex, and that's about it because that's what guys shared about. But I wanted what they had. I wanted what they had. You know, and my whole foundation is alcoholism and addiction. It took my mom. It took my sister. I mean, all this good stuff. And I sat there, and I went to my first Al-Anon meeting, and thank God for the women in Al-Anon because they welcomed me there. There was only one other guy, and there was like 12 other women. And thank God they're there to say, hey, we're glad you're here. Keep coming back. And God blessed me with that ability to take away the messenger part of it. I could just hear the message. You know, and I heard hope, and I heard strength, and I heard, you know what, things are going to be okay, and my life is shitty right now, but tomorrow it's going to be great. You know, because they had faith. And that's the stuff I wanted. You know, so I got a sponsor. You know, and I did the steps. And you know what? I was all jacked up to do my fourth. Because I figured, you know what? If this is going to make a difference in my life, I'm going to do it. And why not do it 100%? You know what? I'm going to lay it all on the table. And you know what? It's just like doing relationships. And I didn't know how to do relationships. And I told my wife this. I said, I feel like I'm standing naked in front of you. But I'm just going to do what I'm supposed to do because this is going to make me a better person. That's why I looked at my steps. So I did my fourth and then my fifth and skipped six and seven because I wanted to get right to eight. So I had to go back and do that part, you know. And you know, I did that and I went home, but you know what? I was the guy that was the jock, the girl guy, all that stuff, and I was scared to death on the inside. You and I were just the same. Just the same. You know, and this program has given me friends, and it's given me hope, and it's given me a power greater than myself. You know, who am I to judge? You know, somebody asked me to come up and say, you know what, I need your hand for a while. I'm going to give it. Because who am I to judge, you know? Men and men's meeting, I think it's important. And guys, you know, there's a lot of guys out there. I mean, to me, alcoholism is like taking a hand grenade, just toss it in the middle of the room, and it goes off. And there's collateral damage everywhere. Some people die. Some people get hurt. You know, it's just, it's collateral damage. And there's a lot of us out there. You know, and what I try to do is, I heard a lady say this to me, and she goes, what if I'm the only person that somebody meets that I'm from Al-Anon? I'm the example of Al-Anon to them. You know, how am I going to be that day? You know, what I try to do is I try to say hello to everyone. You know, I try to be open, and I go to open AA meetings. I highly suggest go to open AA meetings. I'm still hearing God come through them. We're still talking about experience, strength, and hope. You know, I just don't have the physical allergy. You know, but I've been in an AA meeting. At the end of an AA meeting, someone will come and say, you know what, my brother is dying, and he needs Al-Anon. Absolutely, have him call me. But again, my opinion only, you've got to be willing to come into the rooms. I can't hold your hand and put you in a headlock and bring you in. I will give you my number. I'll shake your hand. I'll say, please call me. But I am not going to force you in here, because my ass wouldn't have been forced to come in here. I had to be willing to do that. You know, so we need to be open for people, you know. And again, thank you, ladies, for being there, because you guys made me come back. You know, again, men kind of freaked me out, too. But this program has allowed me to say, you know what, it's all good, because God's got it. It's already played out. You know, my last thing I'm going to say is, I heard a gal, and I bring up folks from AA a lot because I have so much experience with both of them, but this lady's talking, and I don't even remember what she was talking about, but it was horrible. Either she's dying, somebody just died, or I mean, but it's absolutely horrible, and I'm talking to her about it, and she just looked me straight in the eye and says, you know what, it's already played out, Larry. I'm just along for the ride. It's going to be okay. And I remember just looking at her, and she really felt that, and that's what I wanted. Because the world's a whole lot lighter if I don't have to worry about anybody but myself, you know, and just be willing to give service. I'm not powerful. I am powerless, you know, but I'm willing to do something different today. And God bless you guys for being of service, and I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Joe. 22 years ago, when I walked into my first Al-Anon meeting, two wonderful ladies first stepped me, and I want to thank them for that and all the ladies in this room, because to me, that saved my life. Fast forward 22 years. Gosh, not much happened. Anyway, but I'm also a recovering alcoholic. And as I stepped up my Al-Anon program in the last few years, it came to mind that there's a lot of guys really struggling out there. And, you know, one guy came up to me and says, would you be my sponsor? I go, sure. All right, here's what we got to do. You know, we got to work the steps. You got to get involved. You got to start sponsoring. You know, I mean, I had this whole list of things that he had to do. And he was like, thank God. Thank God. Somebody's going to direct me in the right direction. So we started a men's group, of course. There wasn't any in our area. Only because two of my sponsees were talking about it for like a year and a half. And I says, well, let's just do it. Let's just have a meeting. And they're like, oh, okay, yeah. So here we are today. You know, I'm getting calls weekly from guys. What about this men's group, you know? And I says, yeah, come on in. You know, come on over, you know. Then they're asking me if I'll sponsor them. I says, well, you know what? I got these sponsees that this is part of their thing. They have to sponsor people. And so it's starting to grow, and it's starting to spread. And the feedback I get from guys, you know, it makes my heart really feel good. And I know I'm in the right place. So thank you, ladies. Thanks for getting me going here. And thank you, guys, for keeping me here. Thanks.
Oh,
Hi, I'm Stephen, a grateful member of Al-Anon. Also a double winner, but as I heard when I came into the rooms of Al-Anon, even if you came from another program, we're here to talk about the side of us that needs Al-Anon. And I want to address that side and also start off by thanking the women in Al-Anon. Thank God that Lois threw that shoe, you know, and it benefits me today. Thank you, Mike, for speaking. I live in San Francisco. As I said, a double winner, if you can't tell, black, African-American. And I did not find, when I first went to meetings, everyone who looked like me, but I was drowning. And I find when you're drowning, you will grab whatever's floating. And that's what I did. And I thank God for that because, you know, it talked about our sights once clouded were clear and we begin to recognize truth. I can sit in the rooms and hear a mother talking about the pain of her child and feel the emotion. I can sit in the rooms and hear, you know, a child talking about their parents because my sights aren't clouded. What brought me into the rooms, I had all that experience, strength, and hope of 17 years of the other program, and all that self-knowledge availed me nothing. I was sitting in a room. He walked in. I saw him. He saw me. And the part about him saying, hi, I'm a newcomer, I'm a recovering crystal meth addict, what part did I ignore? All of it. I ignored all of that and started this relationship that sent me with all that, those years of sobriety into insanity. And I came into these rooms. Someone said, go to Al-Anon. And I'm like, I will not go to Al-Anon at 17 years sober. And a woman came up to me and said, you will get in enough pain. And she was right. So I came in here and I was like, what is the difference? I was doing all the comparing. And someone said, everything you've learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, put it down. I'm like, when are you not a newcomer? How do you know all of that stuff? And people gently kept saying, the side of us that needs Al-Anon. You know, I'm an adult child of an alcoholic addict. I never realized that and never thought about it. I just came into recovery because of my addiction. And Al-Anon has saved my life. You know, it's changed the way I sponsor. I'm on the fourth step currently. Because I got into action in Al-Anon because I didn't want to be here 3 years later and just have my story. I wanted recovery, and they had learned that if you want recovery, get into the steps. And, you know, and I no longer adjust. I don't really care what the lifeboat looks like. When I'm drowning, I don't want to die. So I come into the rooms. I don't adjust my story. I used to go, well, I can't go to that meeting because I'm gay. And I'm like, I have one truth. And no matter where I go, people will hear my truth. Because I did enough adjusting and lying and all that other stuff. It was just insane. So I just wanted to share. I wanted to thank Mike again for not only the courage, but speaking your truth and not adjusting it. I really appreciate that. I wanted to acknowledge the women and the men. Because I came here knowing what real men looked and sounded like when one put my mom in the hospital because of his addiction. So I wasn't really concerned about trying to fit in with the projection of real men. I was concerned about not drowning. And Al-Anon has helped me fall together, not apart. So thank you.
I'm Tim. I'm a fellow member of Diego over there. Let's rock, 7 o'clock, let's rock. I got a shirt. Ooh. I qualify for this program all over the place. I often talk about myself as I'm the product of a drunken sperm, meaning a controlling egg. That's how I was conceived. My father had been an only child, and he decided that my older sister was going to be an only child, and my mother decided she would do what she could do and got him drunk, and I came along, and he decided that it wouldn't be too bad to have two kids as long as the second one was a girl, so I disappointed him again. Kids know that. Kids know what goes on in the house. I grew up in an alcoholic home, very much affected by it, and I was the invisible type. One of the reasons I'm standing up here is I'm no longer invisible. I've discovered who I am with the help of Al-Anon. I'm able to do things that were normally extremely scary for me, to speak in front of groups of more than six people. I came into Al-Anon March 22, 2001 with a severe case of obsession, and I wanted to get the person that I was obsessed over out of my life. I thought maybe Al-Anon could do that. I didn't want to fix that alcoholic. I just wanted to get that person out of my life. And I started to hear things like, go to six different meetings. So I thought, well, you're supposed to keep count. You know, instead of keeping count of the drinks, you can keep count of your meetings. Around the second or third year, I was up into the thousands, 1,500 meetings, I think. I don't know. I lost count around year four. I also discovered that my story kept getting more and more dramatic the longer I was in Al-Anon. I've been arrested since I've been in Al-Anon for domestic violence. I've had my car burst into flames on the freeway because I didn't take proper maintenance of it. All kinds of things have happened, and I have a lot more to talk about. I also discovered that my story of recovery started before I got into recovery, that I was so tired of not wanting to turn into my father that I decided, who cares? You know, I was dead. I was the walking dead, and I wanted to have a life, and so I changed my standards. It was like, whatever. I started to give up. And I met the perfect alcoholic for me. I was in a bar, and I was having a wonderful night where I just felt like I could do anything. I'd been invited to go to Magic Mountain, one of the amusement parks outside of L.A. And I turned around, and I saw this person, and I said, do you like roller coasters? And he answered back, yes. And that was the beginning of my roller coaster ride. I also knew that he was an alcoholic, and I had this little voice in my ear saying, you are now going to deal with your father. You are ready. I thought I was ready. Al-Anon taught me that I wasn't ready, that I needed this program to get ready for a lot of more things to happen. That person just got out of rehab 2 days ago. We have been together so much for my getting rid of him with my obsession. We've been in a relationship for 10 years, only surviving the relationship because we don't live together. I got that smart. With Al-Anon, I learned that he has to provide for himself, and then he has his own higher power. And I discovered that I had one. Mine is a wonderful one that gives me parking spaces and kicks me in the butt when I do something bad. You know, I have the karma god mixed with a parking fairy. That is my higher power, and it works for me now. I try to keep my higher power constantly evolving just outside of what I can understand, because I figure once I understand it, I'm going to manipulate my higher power too, like I've done everybody else in my life. So I appreciate so many people that are willing to stand up in front of other people and say the truth. You know, and I'm so glad to see more and more men in the program. Men, too, were something extremely scary for me. My father scared me. I didn't want anything to do with men. I was really confused when I came out gay. And, you know, there I was attracted to what I was most afraid of. It made no sense. The women's meetings were so comfortable because I could relate. They talked about their alcoholic husbands. They talked about having the he-he-he's. And I had the he-he-he's, too. But now I have an answer. Thank you for letting me share.
Hi, my name is Randy. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. I grew up in Southern California in Santa Clarita, and I worked at Magic Mountain when I was 17. It's really a pleasure to be here and meet people from all over the world and from my hometown, too. I started going to a therapist in 2005 after I was in a relationship with a young lady who, after I told her that I didn't want to be with her anymore, proceeded to stalk me, and I ended up getting a restraining order, and then felt bad for her, so I got back together with her and then had to get another restraining order. So I knew that I qualified as codependent, and thank God that there is there obviously is now some literature on that. I'm very, very interested in that. I moved to Kansas City, Missouri 2 years ago, and at the insistence of my therapist and a friend of mine who's who just celebrated 5 years of sobriety in L.A., started reluctantly going to Al-Anon because I just, my family was not an alcoholic family. It was definitely a codependent family, and I just didn't feel that I related to all the stories. I started going to, and still to this day, the Smithville meeting in Missouri is my home meeting. And when I first started going there. I was the only male there, and I wouldn't say that I was intimidated at first. I did think it was kind of weird. I just kind of joked about it and said, well, you know, at least I can get inside and to the other side. And I did, and I continue to. So I also share my gratitude to all the women in the program for being there and for offering me advice after the meeting, which I learned was the only place that I might maybe possibly get somebody to actually tell me what to do, rather than listening and trying to figure it out myself. I have had experience with men's meetings. I was working in Oklahoma City for about 5 months last year and had the pleasure of joining a men's meeting there, and definitely felt the difference. That's what I love about this program, is that I always learn something from every meeting. I can always take something away from everybody's story, and there was obviously a different feeling in that room. It was certainly unconditional love, but the words were a little different, and the attitudes were a little different, and I love all those guys for what I learned from them. When I was home in L.A. a couple months ago, I went to the La Cunada meeting, and it was the one meeting that they had that was a speaker meeting, so I didn't get to experience the 100 or so, or whatever it is now, loving men that are there. But I definitely appreciate the diversity and the autonomous nature of each group, and thank both the men and the women in this program for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. And I'll keep coming back. Thanks.
Hey, I'm Kurt. I'm from Chicago, and you know, there are a lot of folks in the programs that I've been in and the meetings that I've been in Chicago who, when faced with the prospect of being surrounded by 40 to 50,000 alcoholics, would have gone completely berserk. So I applaud those of you who are here and who may be feeling a little uncomfortable, because that's a natural thing. That's how I'm wired. I know that. I am fortunate enough to be married to a recovering alcoholic, and I never call her my alcoholic, and that's just me, but she is her own alcoholic. She has her own program. I have my own program. And earlier on, very early on in our relationship, in the middle of a disagreement, I came to the realization, and I shared with her, I basically said, you know how important your sobriety is to you. It's a life and death thing. It's the one thing that you can't give up on, regardless of what. I could come and go, anything else could come and go, but your sobriety is important to you. Well, that's how important my sanity is to me. That's what I'm about. And once we got that straight, it was interesting how from that point on, we understood very, very clearly where our priorities are. And our relationship is a very strong one and a very honest one. And I'm fortunate with that. I want to kind of go back to what Mike was talking about. I really appreciate your service and what you had to say, Mike. And I appreciate all the volunteers here. I've been in the program for about 6 years. And I'm coming up on the ninth step, a little slow maybe. But for me, the toughest part is making amends to my father. And one of the reasons for that, a lot of people have shared that when they were growing up, they may have had a tough relationship with their dads, and mine was no exception. In my particular case, you know, it was the walking on eggshells, never being certain as to what was going to set things off and create a very tense situation. And that's affected a lot of my life, but, I always kind of tended to push all of that stuff back on him. Well, he passed away when I was 12 years old. And so that's been a long time ago. And I had to come to a conclusion that, let's get beyond this. So that was kind of the first step of that process. And then I had to come to the conclusion, well, gee, what would it be like if I made amends to him? What was my part in that particular relationship? And I started understanding that better, and the reasons that I was uncomfortable around men and one-to-one situations. I had some good friendships over the years, but never a really emotionally intimate relationship with another man in terms of being able to talk about stuff that was really, you know, below the surface. And my sponsor gave that to me. My sponsor's anchored me in this program for 6 years. He moved away to New Hampshire a year and a half ago. But we've maintained that relationship, and it's been an incredibly important relationship for me because he finally got me to the point where I could understand my part in that whole dynamic, and that I could understand and have compassion for my father. My father was doing the best that he could with what he had to work with at that particular point. The man had survived being wounded in World War II and some of the worst action imaginable. And so the rage and all that anger was a natural outpouring of that. And I always thought that my dad would not be very proud of me because most guys go to sports bars and, you know, you got the monitors around there. And I don't know a whole lot about sports. It just wasn't a part of my upbringing. But I did go to a bar in Chicago that had monitors all over the place with different musicals. And I knew the words to every musical because I happened to be in musical theater. So it's just one of those things. And I realized something. My sponsor helped me realize something that my dad always said when I was 4 or 5 years old. You know what I wish for you? I don't wish my life for you. I want you to be able to play the piano like Liberace. Now, he didn't know anything about, I mean, this was a long, long time ago, about Liberace then. And the interesting part about it is that my life in a certain way has become a fulfillment of what my father would have wished for me. So that's helped me to basically say, okay, make my peace with my dad. I would just encourage you all that when you're going back to your respective meetings, reach out to other men. I have three sponsees in this program. I'm recovering in another program from debting, and so I deal with that as well, and have sponsees in that program as well. But it is so important for that relationship to exist. It's an anchor for me. Although I enjoy being around and I understand the perspective of women who have been abused by fathers and that kind of thing in the past, I feel triply blessed with my relationship with my male sponsor because he is the thing that anchors me. He is the thing that gets me back in touch with who I am. And thank you much.
Hi, my name is Peter, and I'm a dual winner, too. I got into recovery August 31st, 1988, in a rehab program where I was on the family side, and my son was the inpatient because, you see, he had a problem. He had a problem with alcohol and drugs, but I was all right. And in that family program they mentioned to us, Al-Anon, they told us that we were affected, you know, as much as the alcoholic, all this other stuff. So we went to a few Al-Anon meetings, some other meetings, after my son graduated from the recovery program, and we kept on going. I also was challenged by the counselors to quit drinking, so I did, to show them that I wasn't an alcoholic. And I spent some time in Al-Anon and found my true calling. I remember coming in and being very nervous about the whole thing. I remember going to an Al-Anon meeting that was clearly Wives of Alcoholics and sharing, you know, my feelings and the rest, and being straightened out. That wasn't pleasant. Not that I have anything against women who love alcoholics. I married one. She's a wonderful person. But I can't see myself going out to coffee afterwards with a bunch of them. I do better with the guys. That's the truth. There's nothing wrong with the women. There's nothing wrong with me. It's just a difference. And so when I hear people say something that my first AA sponsor mentioned all the time, said, well, all you need to start a new meeting is a resentment in the coffee pot. You can buy the coffee pot, but you got to work on the resentment. I keep thinking of how easy it would be to start a men's Al-Anon meeting if there isn't one in your area. Of course, I'm able to say this without taking any action because there's a mixed Al-Anon meeting that I'm looking forward to that has a lot of dual winners in it. So it's very program-oriented. And that's what I need. That's what I like. I love you gals. I love you guys. I love the sharing, the coffee afterwards, the conversations. But I'm in the meeting for the program because that's what makes me better. And thanks for allowing me to share with you today. And thanks for all the advice and input and feelings and understanding. I know I'm in the right room, even though I got both.
Hello, everybody. My name is Lisa. I'm a recovering member of Al-Anon. And one thing I'd like to say is the meeting, my home group is in Spring Hill, Kansas, and half of our meeting is men. And sometimes they outnumber us. It's a big deal. You know, they clap and everything. That's a big deal when they outnumber us. But I just wanted to say that I'm not really sure. I kind of wish that some of them were here because maybe they could share with you why they keep coming back. I don't know. But it was kind of a real big surprise to us because it's a relatively new group. We're only like, I think, four and a half years old. But when I first went to my first Al-Anon meeting, I walked in the room. I was 25 years old. There wasn't but one woman in that room. Of course, there were no men, but there wasn't one woman in that room that wasn't older than my or at my parents' age. And I spent probably too much time looking at the differences instead of the similarities. We're all different. We all have different things going on and different outlooks, come from different families, different social economical groups, and I guess that's why Al-Anon AA works. When I learned to start looking at the similarities instead of the differences, things got a whole lot better for me, and I was a whole lot less uncomfortable in a room. And like I said, I got up and all these men are talking, and I'm the only woman, so that did. I just want to thank you all for being there. I really enjoy the men's perspective in our group and have enjoyed this meeting today. Thank you.
Member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon, my name is Dave. God is so wonderful. God is so beautiful. 29 years ago, I had a son who was driving me nuts, and a lady member of Al-Anon suggested that maybe I go to Al-Anon, and I did. I love alcoholics. I really do. And God is so powerful. My second favorite alcoholic came to me one day and he said, Dad, when I got up this morning, I said I was going to fry chicken and make my bed. And alcohol didn't let me do that. You've been going to all these meetings. What do I do? And I turned his ass over to Alcoholics Anonymous. He went one meeting. And I'm so happy he's sober today. walking between here and the Hyatt Hotel less than an hour ago. This boy that was a close friend and my second favorite alcoholic, he revealed to me one time that he smoked up all my marijuana, and he making amends to me. And I met him on the street, and I haven't seen him in over 25 years because he's in the other fellowship. And someone in this program said that when somebody drinking and drugging, it affects 10 other people. And I know that for a fact. And when the lady was saying that some of her meetings that there's more men than women, that's one of my biggest thrills in Al-Anon, when I can go to a meeting and there's more men. I'm from Wildwood, New Jersey, and it's pretty close to the ocean. So in the summertime, it's 4 or 5 people, 6, 8 people. In the wintertime, it's a couple hundred in our meetings. And during the wintertime, there is a couple of meetings. About once every 2 months, there's more men than women. And it's really, really powerful. And I take a lot of flack from the people in Alcoholics Anonymous that I'm belong to Al-Anon. But when their kids, and especially when their kids get drinking and drugging, they come to me and say, "What do you do? I know you go to Al-Anon." And I've heard someone say this morning that's been in Al-Anon a while, he loves Al-Anon more than AA. And I love Al-Anon more than AA, but I've been in AA longer than Al-Anon. But I'm a double winner, and God is so powerful. And maybe God will show you that warm, fuzzy feeling in you that I got today when I just met that adopted friend, adopted son. So thanks for listening.
My name's Jerry. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. I want to say first that I welcome all the folks from all over, and I'm so grateful to be able to be here. We're from Friendswood, and it's just a little bit south of Houston. And we have a men's meeting, and I could share all along the lines of what everyone said. I really appreciate the lady sharing. Predominantly, I'm here because I qualify for Al-Anon, and I don't need anything other than that. And I'm really grateful for all the diversities, and I'm really grateful for that. But primarily, it's the singleness of purpose that we have here. I want to say the reason I got the blues is because I needed the schedule, because I am yet a double winner. And my wife is, they gave her a yellow badge, by the way, so she really thinks she's confused. And that's for friends, and so she's in Al-Anon, so she's getting some strange looks across the hall. I just want to say that, you know, it took till from August the 10th of 91 until January the 17th of 2003 for me to realize the differences and to accept that some things I can bring to an Al-Anon meeting and they're helpful and my experience there can be helpful, but no one needs to know too much about my drunkalog there. And I say that, and no one wants to hear me fix another relationship there. And that's just, you know, I came to a meeting that was so many gracious women welcomed me in that meeting across the hall. But they were pretty damn tough on me, too. And you know what? I'm really grateful for them today. Because no matter what it had been in that room, I was to the point where I was kicking in crack house doors with a 45 in my hand, trying to save someone's life. And I believe that might have gotten me killed quicker than what I was doing to myself years ago. And they told me, "You might better look into that." And for that part of this program, and sometimes the brutalness, and I definitely heard when the man said, "Make sure you don't be going to your specific meeting too much. You need to stay out of my comfort zone and go somewhere and heaven forbid realize that maybe I'm not there for me. Maybe I need to sit in that Friday evening meeting that most people never even show up to because that one person might be coming to that meeting. And I might ought to sit there longer than 3 minutes and close my book and go home. That's why I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. And by the way, I wanted to say, it is the previous, my alcoholic program that gives me the ability to get up here, but it's also my Al-Anon program that gets me to stay under 2 minutes. Thank you.
I'd like to thank everyone that spoke and say that this is a culmination of 30 years of attending meetings, attending conventions, attending conferences, and I'm very grateful to be here. And I know my wife is looking down, and she's here with me, and for that I'm very grateful. And now I think we'll close with the Lord's Prayer. Whose Father?
Our Father.